Blog Talk Radio.
Air is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man, is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Direct to El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Have reached a tipping point.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to Tipping Point. Welcome to Tipping Point on this beautiful Tuesday evening. Well, it's beautiful here in Florida. I am Stephen Platinum, joined by the venerable Larry Goodman. How are you, Larry?
Note to self, don't preload the intro, because when you preload it, you can't fade it. It just keeps blaring through the whole thing and drowns you out. Sorry. I'm doing fine.
So you were just jumping right into it. By the way, can you tell us who our guest is going to be
this
week?
Our guest is Mr. Brandon Finch. Brandon was at one point a member of the WWE creative team, one of the writers. He's also a close follower of the independent wrestling scene and has been involved in numerous shows in the, of all places, in the Oklahoma area, the old Mid-South area. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that as well.
Absolutely. So we're going to do that, and we have a new segment tonight, the Tipping Point Police Blotter. Larry, say it ain't so. Say that. Is there more than one arrest story to cover tonight?
Well, there are two. You know, yes. Yes, there are multiple.
Wow.
There are multiple.
Well, we're definitely going to get into all of that. But I just want to jump in and Larry, talk about, you were at the UIW show this Saturday in Temple, Georgia, your new favorite wrestling town this Saturday. Is that correct?
Yes, the death of wrestling in that town, I'm telling you. Good Lord Almighty. It was depressing. I mean, the atmosphere was depressing for the show. I just don't understand why people would go to a show and not be more interested and involved than you were. We might as well just stay home.
Yeah, that's tough.
Tough crowd to work in front of. Tough environment. Not a fun environment to watch a show in. Not a great show, but, I mean, it certainly would have been a better show if the people had showed some enthusiasm. Even the AWE fans, and there were a few of them there, even they couldn't muster up a whole lot of, try as they might, they couldn't really get much going either. So it was pretty pretty deadly atmosphere. And, of course, we do have a new UIW champion, new heavyweight champion. Murder One is the four-time UIW heavyweight champion. So, but tell me a little bit about what went down at Platinum while we're talking about the weekend's activities.
At Platinum, basically what happened was he had the Carpenter teaming up with many of his cohorts, Bill the Butcher and Trevor Aeon and others, in a big eight-person tag. But the big story was Carpenter and his crew picked up the win, of course. But Kevin Blue, what's his name? Kevin Blue came out of nowhere, attacked Quasi Mandisco, and said Jeff G. Bailey sends his regards. And I've been told that Jeff G. Bailey is going to be there for the next PCW show. So crazy goings on. Yes, yes. And you were at UIW, you son of a bitch. Well, you know, Larry, there's something, it does bring up something I want to talk about, which is there's a lot of tournaments going on. And of course, you know, in the Georgia area, we kicked off with a great one, you know, with all this sort of like rash of tournaments with the Scenic City. And certainly you were at that event, a phenomenal two-day event, just well booked and just great stuff. And since then, I mean, I feel like a lot of these tournaments are kind of getting diminishing returns. What's your thought about the tournament format for pro wrestling in Georgia?
Well, I like wrestling tournaments. I was a big fan of the Ted Petty. If you can do a tournament and tell a story with the tournament, great. But if it's just a tournament to do a tournament and there's really nothing, which unfortunately the UIW tournament didn't really have any notable story whatsoever to it, then it's kind of like a real drag. So, and you know, AIWF tournament that Southern Fried ran was kind of the same thing. You know, I mean, there really wasn't much story, and here you had a guy, Fred Yehi, won the tournament, and they seemed to be setting up a match with Justin Overstreet. And now, do I understand right that Yehi has vacated that title?
Yeah, Yehi has vacated the title. And the story come out of AIWF was, well, he vacated the title, but he's doing it because he says he wants to go for our world championship. So they don't seem mad about it. They don't, like, I don't get it at all. I mean, why can't people drop the title in the ring again? I mean, I think Devin Nicole did the same thing with their women's title. Why can't people just lose it? I don't get it at all, and I don't get why there aren't repercussions. I think the is it the Americas title? That's the name of the title that Fred Yehi won.
Yes, so correct, the Americas.
I think it's going to be decided at a Battle Royal at Big Woods show on the third weekend in December, I believe.
Well, that sucks worse than a tournament. Deciding a title in a battle royal.
I could be wrong about that. It could be a tournament, but I believe it is a battle royal. I just, you know, like those are two things that I have really strong feelings about. Battle royals, I don't like them. I mean, that's I kind of came up with the platinum royal format just as a way of, because battle royals to me always feel it's the same exits. I mean, there's only so many ways you can skin that cat, right, of throwing people out of a battle royal. And so it's like, well, you know, you're kind of punishing the people who do the most work. If you're throwing out the most people, I just felt like you should be rewarded realistically in a sporting format. And, you know, if you're the last one in the battle royal, that's a traditional winner. So why not have the two of them wrestle a match? But again, it's nothing that I overuse. I don't, and the tournaments, the only tournament we do is we do the Platinum Classic, which is sort of came about by accident because one night we only had six wrestlers in the locker room because of an ice storm. And so it was, you know, like Nauseousism, to give him credit, sort of said, well, we could do a tournament and, you know, here's kind of a weird way we could do it. So that's what we do. And it sort of just stuck as a tradition, but yeah, tournaments, it's weird. I just watched Super J Cup, where Benoit was in the finals, and just watching that, because honestly, I mean, between the WWE tournament and all these other tournaments that have sort of popped up, I just wasn't feeling it, and so I wanted to watch one that I knew was good, and it was a great reminder of, you know, like you said, a tournament telling a story. But more than that, a chance to see people excel. I think that's another great thing that can happen in a tournament is you can elevate more than one person. You know, you can, even in a loss, if a guy does well in the tournament or surprises you, it's just a great way that you can do three or four things at once if you're booking it right. And did Benoit win that tournament? I mean, honestly, who cares? Because the whole story of that thing, as it turned out, was can Benoit really make his mark on the Japanese scene and internationally? Can he put himself on the map? And he absolutely did. It's just a phenomenal physical performance, storytelling performance, and just wrestling that breakneck style. It's really amazing. It's just an amazing bit of storytelling. The Japanese, of course, love tournaments because it allows them, it gives them an excuse to tell a story that normally they don't get to. I mean, Japan, even now, is not what you would call storyline heavy. There's angles, but they're more like athletically based. But a tournament allows them to kind of have an excuse to have different matchups and create drama through the tournament format. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's like the tournaments that use the format to create dramatic moments. I'm just thinking specifically of the Scenic City, right? I mean, even months removed from it, even though I wasn't there, I can tell you two or three of the stories that came about. One of them was, you know, Jimmy Rave kind of going from hated to loved, back to hated, and along the way defeating Gunnar Miller by kind of screwing him over, by taking advantage of his good nature, and making everybody think he was really injured, and then sort of screwing him over. That allows, you know, that's a story that can be, that can go into future Empire shows. And then Jimmy Rave wins the thing, which is a great story of redemption, and on and on and on. I don't know, like, Larry, what are your thoughts about a tournament? Here's a question. What's a tournament from years, decades ago? What's a tournament that really sticks out in your mind as one that was very effective?
Well,
I'm going to try to think of one as well.
I go back, this isn't going that far back, but the Ted Petty that Mike Quackenbush won, coming back from injury where it looked like he was not going to compete, and then he goes on to win, was one of the ones that I remember the most. Of course, they did a lot of tag tournaments way back in the day with Georgia Championship Wrestling. That was one of the things they used to do on the Thanksgiving shows, would do a tag team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But none of those really, like, it's too long ago. None of them really, you know, none of those matches really stick with me like the Ted Petty did.
I saw where they're doing the Ted Petty again soon. I saw that on Rotten's page. And I just remember thinking, like, you know, that's an amazing, like, when you think about the guys that have come out of, that's another sort of, I think that's another hallmark of a great tournament, that it happens more than once, and guys are kind of made by the tournament. So certainly the, you know, the Super 8, I remember the year that Austin won it, now Xavier Woods. And it was kind of a surprise that he won it, but then it was kind of not a surprise that he won it, in that soon after he got the WWE deal. And you're like, wow, like, they really do a good job of sort of picking guys that are not destined for greatness, but certainly guys that are able to kind of reach the next level. And certainly, you know, like Kyle Matthews has been a part of that tournament, Corey Hollis, and, you know, Hancock, BJ Hancock. And I just think, like, that's great that there's traditional tournaments out there that can help your career.
You know, I'm glad that Ian Rotten is coming back with the Ted Petty, although this is a one-night tournament with 16 men. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but nothing like the extravaganzas he did. I mean, the 2004 Ted Petty, the final, Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles versus Bryan Danielson in a three-way. Other competitors in that tournament. Check this out. Austin Aries.
Boy.
Alex Shelley. Chris Hero. Matt Sydal. Chris Sabin. Claudio Castagnoli. Nigel McGuinness. And Roderick Strong. All in that goddamn tournament. I mean, it was incredible.
Literally all guys that went on... who went on to make a living at pro wrestling.
Yeah.
That's what they did. And with the exception of one, guys that made it to either TNA or WWE under contract.
Right.
Like, and I mean, even Roderick Strong, I mean, he is the – I mean, I can't emphasize this enough. When that guy wrestles in Florida, they lose their mind. And he's sort of got that pepper back at Ring of Honor, where he's one of those guys that's just seen as, like, a top-tier guy again.
And so it should be.
Yes. You know, I think when at the point at which TNA was interested, I think they should have taken him. Like, you know, the knock was – he wasn't really, like, he's not the guy that's going to bowl you over with a promo, at least back then. But, man, there's just guys who kind of have it. I mean, he's not the biggest, none of that stuff, but he's just one of those guys that has learned to just, he's just at his peak ring work-wise. And, boy, that's an impressive tournament. I mean, it's sort of the indie version of the Royal Rumble that Flair won. When you look at the list of who was in that Royal Rumble, it will never be like that again. You'll never have that many, like, guys that were main event guys for various promotions all in one ring, plus the Repo Man. So.
Hey, you know, since we've Brandon should be calling in any second, but since we got a couple extra minutes, I wanted to I wondered if you had seen this match from Arena Mexico last weekend between Kamitachi and Dragon Lee.
No, I have not. Tell me about that.
I'm going to post it, the link for it. I mean, this is pro wrestling, like the Cirque du Soleil version of pro wrestling. I mean, I don't know how these guys survived the stuff they were doing in this match. It wound up actually being a four-fall match. I won't explain that because I don't want to ruin it, so if you're going to watch it. But definitely go out of your way to see it. And, I mean, my reaction was it was fantastic, and the human body does not have very many matches like that in it. You just cannot do that kind of a match very often. But it was fantastic.
I'm glad you're talking about that because, you know, when the internet is a buzz and the number one thing I have to watch is, you know, is something to do with a wrestler's crotch being pushed onto somebody. Like, again, wrestlers, you got to do better. Like, you got to do better. You can't get that excited about that spot. You just can't. Like, put up a good match or something. Yeah, that thing found its way onto my Facebook feed way too many times.
Oh, I know. It made its way onto at least some type of national television show where, of course, they made great fun of it. That's what I first saw. It was on TV Saturday morning. I thought, oh, boy. Another black guy for pro wrestling.
Thanks, Joey Ryan. Thanks
a
lot.
Well, you know, we're now joined. Poor guy has to follow that. We're now joined by our special guest for the evening, former WWE writer, Brandon Finch. Brandon, welcome to Tipping Point.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great, Brandon. This is Steven. Brandon, I'm just going to go ahead and fire off a question. Something when I did a little background research on you, and Larry talked about it earlier, one thing that I like is that you're still actively involved sort of in the independent scene in wrestling. I'm just going to fire this question off to you and get it out of the way. Do you still watch WWE?
Yes. I have the network, the app, and everything.
Gotcha. When you watch what's going on now, and, you know, a lot of people crap on it, whatever. When you watch, what's something that if you had a hand in what was going on right now, what's one move that you would immediately make? What's your first instinct when you're watching the show now on something you think could improve it right off the bat?
Music hits and Brock comes out with Paul Heyman and drops the title. He gets the title from Sheamus, and you know, I feel like they tease the Wyatt family versus
Sheamus' group, right? The League of Nations, yeah.
Yeah. That just reminded me of kind of like when Jake Roberts get into a feud, and he wasn't necessarily a babyface, but he was kind of not going to take any credit from anybody, and he was going to go into business for himself and fight, say, the Honky Tonk Man or whoever. And I just kind of like the gunslinger viewpoint that the town's only too big for two groups. It was fresh, and it was something new, and we hadn't seen it. So when you have a three-hour show, that's definitely a plus.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. For those that didn't know, so the, you know, Sheamus opened with his League of Nations, his sort of a group of four guys, and then they sort of declared their greatness, and the response was the Wyatt family appeared in the ring, and the crowd definitely reacted. They definitely knew they were getting to witness something. And then there was two other four-person teams, and then it ended up being this big, huge match to open Raw. But you know what it reminded me of, and it's so funny because you're in the Oklahoma area. It reminded me of one of my favorite Bill Watts things, which was in UWF when they did Devastation Incorporated against the Freebirds when they were both heels. And I mean, that was one of those things that's changed me and like helped sort of mold me into the booker that I became, where I just went, oh my God. Like it really felt like it was the exact right move at the exact right time. Like I didn't think of it that way. I was in high school, but I remember, I mean, the fact that I still remember it to this day and I'm an old ass man tells you, you know, how impactful that was.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you're going to do something that you're not going to see, you haven't seen on WWE with the three-hour shows and the two-hour shows, and, you know, something fresh for the viewer is always a good thing. And I just felt like they were obligated. Apologize in advance, though. I have, like, fighting back a little bit of a cold here, so if I'm kind of hard to understand, my apologies. But, I felt like, well, this is something I want to see, but now I have to go back and watch a rehash of ECW, and, you know, it just seemed like, put that on the back burner or even just forget it, because I'm kind of really over the Dudleys and all of that. I mean, no offense to the great work ethic by all those guys. It just seems really, like, stale.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're at a real time where they don't, I mean, it's sort of, they talked about the brass ring, and it really seemed like anybody can come in at this point and take it. And I thought that would have been that could be a really hot feud with the, and you have multiple pairings. You know, you could break off into a three-man tag, a one-on-one match, sort of the Kingpin versus the Kingpin sort of thing, and, you know, it just attacks in the locker room. It would have just kind of added.
What a great thing it could have been for Rusev to, like, because Rusev is, if there's an enforcer on that team, I guess that it's Rusev. And to the thought of, like, Rusev, I mean, a feud with Braun Strowman where he kind of got to go 50-50 for a little while could only help. It doesn't even matter who wins. Right? Like, Larry, did you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Please go ahead.
You know, Brandon, I was just curious was going to ask you if you could talk a little bit about the general process that was in place during when you were at WWE for developing these shows, because when I see it now, I wonder, like, how could you have all these creative minds, allegedly at least, and come up with such lame material sometimes? So could you talk us through, like, what was the process like?
I was with the company in 2004, and back then, and there was only SmackDown and Raw, and I believe Heat on Sundays, and that was it. So we didn't have NXT, we didn't have ECW. There was no content for social media. I mean, this was back in the Stone Age. So, but, you know, the process, I assume it's still the same, is that, you know, they have production meetings, They have scripts for the shows that go over numerous drafts. They have character grids that would go over, you know, who would be feuding with who and where they were going to, kind of reverse engineering where they were for, say, WrestleMania or SummerSlam or any of the big events. And, you know, ultimately, there's one person that oversaw it all, and it was Vince McMahon. And he would sit at a table, and there would be writers, and there would be people like Bruce Prichard or Michael Hayes and, you know, veterans of the industry all discussing it. And, you know, I think people are shocked that they think that the writers have some sort of say when ultimately they're almost there to just shoot stuff out at Vince or Stephanie. Back then, it was Stephanie was in charge of creative, so that was, you know, that process was just having spitballing stuff for Vince and the higher-ups. And then you had the head writers, like Ed Koski or Brian Growitz, and they would kind of be the directors. They would kind of mold what with Vince, what the show would be. So the sort of the time frame I was with the company was post WrestleMania 20 and MSG, where everyone basically left, and we didn't have Brock, and we didn't have Austin, and we didn't have all those guys, and it was just Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit as the champions. So it was kind of a – there was a lot of good ideas. I mean, Raw was very front-loaded because you had Triple H, you had Shawn Michaels and Chris Benoit. SmackDown, I think we were meant to come up with more stuff than what we – because there were so many new talents.
Yeah.
And not a lot of the veterans were on that show. And it was mainly just Eddie Guerrero and sort of the overnight invention of JBL. I don't know if you guys can remember that far back, but they did the whole, you know, the draft, and all of a sudden JBL turned into the Texas billionaire character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you had the great heat with that feud, but, I mean, at the time I remember it was, geez, Rene Dupree and John Cena. And I think the Dudleys and the Undertaker were like the undercard for SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty slim. You know, sort of the processes really didn't change, may have changed. They have to produce so much content. I mean, we only had the two-hour show and SmackDown. And he, I don't think, was even really scripted. It was mainly matches on a board. And, but, you know, it was it's very several drafts and a general idea of what they're going through.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's the same. I'm sure the mechanics are still the same. But, yeah, when someone gets hired on as a writer, because I've seen a lot of stuff with Mick Foley and his son, and it's kind of like, they're not going to give him the book, and he's not going to go in and, you know,
right.
Oh, thank God, Dewey's here. He's going to save everything. It's just like a regular corporate-type job in a creative capacity. Like if he went to go work for any other entertainment corporation, he would, you know, he's open. Vince is absolutely open to new ideas and new talent, but necessarily will not always agree with it. And that's kind of where it is. I think, like, the shows suffer from a real antagonistical view between Vince and the fans right now, because it seems like they're pushing people that he thinks should be pushed regardless of feedback. And, you know, it reminds me of, like, when, you know, the Daniel Bryan situation, they wouldn't give the fans what they wanted, what the fans needed. And he thought they needed, like, Batista and Randy Orton, and they wanted Daniel Bryan. And so it's kind of a it's weird to see that because usually Vince gives the fans what they want. And right now it just doesn't seem like that's really playing much of a part.
Do you attribute the lack of continuity? Is it because that it all flows through Vince, and is that where the lack of continuity comes from? And what's your view of that? Because it certainly seems like they've had a lot of problems in that area lately.
I think it would be interesting. I mean, I don't know if they have this. I know they have,
mm-hmm.
but like in the movies, they have like line producers that have
right.
a grip. Kind of go through and say, well, he can't get in the car because he crashed the car in the last scene. You know, and kind of and have the children on Raw and SmackDown. That might be something they want to look into that they don't already have. But, I mean, there's a lot of temporary amnesia in some of the stories where we're just meant to forget what's going on. It reminds me of the old WCW where they would, like,
who's
in the white Hummer? You know, we don't care anymore. We've moved on. It hasn't gone anywhere now.
You know, I actually think that line producer idea is a pretty great one that you have, like, just to have somebody who even just keeps track of stuff and just goes, you know, we've turned so-and-so face and heel 4 times in the last 2 years. You know, that's something we should look at. Or, you know, putting these people in together in a sort of thrown together tag match doesn't make sense for this reason and that reason. You know, like we have to come up with an explanation besides we're both bad guys, so we're on the same team. Because in reality, you know, these guys just got done feuding with each other 2 months ago when this guy was a face. That has to be addressed. I think those kind of small details used to be what the WWE excelled in. They were the best. And I think one of the signs of a product that right now is just kind of faltering is little details aren't maintained or picked up or cared about or deemed important. And the funny thing is you just keep telling the fans that what they think isn't important, even when it comes to small details, that's going to come back and bite you. It's like, you know, are the Bellas face or heel? Like, I don't know. Like that's something that I sort of talk about constantly, where it's a constant mixed message of these are the heels, but here are the heels at a children's hospital. And so you're supposed to make these jumps of suspension of disbelief constantly that other TV shows. I mean, the WWE's competition is, I think they're right. Their competition isn't other wrestling groups, not by a long shot. It's other TV shows, but other TV shows don't spend one third of their airtime promoting themselves. They just do a show, you know, And it's such a big advantage that right now they don't have.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I was explaining to someone I still watch and stuff, and you know, if I had to pick like my favorite show, even if it's my favorite show, would I watch 3 hours every week of my favorite show? If I love Doctor Who and I watch four or five hours every week of Doctor Who, I'd be ready to take a couple of weeks off. And you know, they're kind of in that way. The content is so much. And it's just spinning the wheels. And like you say, I think they have, I know, I don't know their manifesto, but it seems like in real life, there aren't heels and faces that, you know, there's gray area. But I think that's what makes wrestling so good, is that you do have the bad and the good. And if you watch the movie, you wouldn't go, oh, I'm kind of rooting for the terrorists so John McClane doesn't rescue his wife. Or, you know...
No. I mean, if you're watching Game of Thrones, I mean, that's what community is Game of Thrones fans. Like, they follow that show to a psychotic degree. And like, you know, they have groups of fans who show up in Spain where they're filming stuff to try to catch a picture of Kit Harington to prove that Jon Snow's still alive. Like, it's that level of mania. But, you know, what it comes down to is, whether you casually watch Game of Thrones or you picked it up mid-season or whatever, like, everybody hates Joffrey. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We all can't wait for that prick to die. And then he dies, and we all celebrate. And then there's a new prick, and then, or then it's Ramsay Snow. But never do they – there's characters that are in the gray one way or the other, or move face heel or vice versa. But it's – you always know where you stand with them. And there's a comfort – I think that it's more than just heat and money and all this stuff. I think there's just a comfort level that people don't – a lot of people don't have with WWE. They just don't feel comfortable. They don't feel like they're watching a show that they trust. Sometimes they're just out and out embarrassed. But I know for myself, like I don't trust it. Like, I watch it with my 8-year-old, and she's fucking smart. She's sharp. And even she goes, wait. She goes, so who am I supposed – and she'll just say it. Like, who am I supposed to be rooting for? You know, when she watches the women, she goes – okay, so, like, is Charlotte bad now? And I go, well,
it's
they're
so
trying to do
to
this. Yeah.
It's so important. It's like my kids, I took them to a live event a couple of months ago, and they, you know, they want to know, okay, which one am I booing, which one am I cheering? And it's just, you know, and the tip-offs, like, you know, if they're dressed in black, you know, obviously Bray Wyatt is a bad guy, and this, you know, wait, Undertaker's a good guy? Yes, he's a good guy. You know, it's all that, you know, that's, you know, kids definitely do identify
who they want to be their art. They want to be a large part of the audience.
Yeah.
I'm interested too when SmackDown moves to USA at the top of the year. Man. Golly. I have a question for you. This is kind of a heady, like, academic kind of question. Since you've been through the Looking Glass and sort of got to, quote unquote, live the dream, right? You got to work for WWE in a writing capacity. And as you've, like, clearly established, which I think is great, like, you know, it's not the thing where you showed up and they went, here's the book, right? Here's the pencil. like Mick, it's your show now, right? It wasn't like that in the least. It was kind of analogous to being like a young producer for a movie company, right? Where you come in and now you get to pitch, right? Like,
right.
Here's a movie I think might work. I don't like it. Give me another. What about this kind of movie? I don't like it. Give me another. What about this? Yeah. And that could be a vehicle for this star.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Maybe. Right. Cool. Like, so now that you've kind of been through the Looking Glass and you've seen it, what's a way that you feel like you've actually been educated about pro wrestling in a way that you would not have known had you not worked for WWE? Because, I mean, people take a lot of shots at them, but at the same time, I'm sure that there's something that you learned that just sticks with you to this day as you continue to be involved in wrestling.
I would say, you know, having walked away from it is, you know, the writers get a lot of bad rep that they use the term, you know, they're all Hollywood writers. And, you know, this is flat out not true. I mean, when I worked there, that wasn't the case. But the main thing is, even if they are uber super fans that are dedicated to the T on making it happen, which I can see is frustrating for fans that go, well, you're telling me they love it, but, you know, but everyone that puts the, I think I have just a great big respect for everyone working, because, I mean, the people that put those packages together that I never see do incredible jobs, and all the production and I guess I thought I was going to come in there and to some degree be able to, I'm a wrestling fan, I know things you don't know, and it's sort of like everybody knows about everything in wrestling, and everyone is a fan. Everyone wants to do the best they can. So it's, let's see. I think just the respect and, you know, that I think I had just turned 30 when I got on there. So it's kind of a, you know, you're kind of, as a young person, you get out of your 20s and your 30s, it's kind of buckle down and get serious. And so that it was, you know, the stress, too, I think, of dealing with. It, you know, there is no off season. You don't really get a break. And everyone is working 9 to 5. And then some, so you can't take a break. And you just have to keep on going. And so I think it kind of toughens me into thinking that I definitely have to excel and be as best as I can be, because everyone else is. And there's about 14,000 different people that want this job, which, I mean, a lot of people can say, yeah, when I work at Google, you know, they have the same attitude, or Apple or something, or any kind of media company, which, you know, the WWE is. So it's, yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. I was trying to think, but, you know, it's a lot more professional. I know a lot of the kind of the old traditionalists, the handshakes and the kayfabe and all that. It's very, you know, people on their best behavior. They're leaving and everyone's going, oh, watch out, because they rib people. And like, they're not. They're just normal. They just want to do their job and make the fans happy and go home. You know, it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's not 1970s.
I mean, just that. Yeah, that insight, I think, is really great. I mean, because there is this sort of idea that it's the Hollywood writers versus the wrestling people. Like, that's, I think, what's sort of come out, and the sort of narrative that people run with, that, oh, it's you know, it's Steph and the writers versus like this core group of wrestling people that really knows what's going on. And
before the network, they had this, the writer's room was in actual the television studio. It wasn't in the Titan Tower. So, I mean, people would come and get tapes made. And, yeah, they would wheel the TV in. And we'd watch a house show from MSG from 85 or some promo with One Man Gang from 86 or whatever. And, you know, there was just that kind of love of the product, and sort of just as much as any fan would be trading tapes, but you know, it's like going to Willy Wonka's factory, and you have these rows of tapes, and it's like, this is the Bobby Heenan show, and you know, now it's so commonplace because of the network, but back then that was the coolest thing. They had the rows of the tapes and the film, and
mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much history, and you could have access to any of it, and it was just very cool. But I mean, everyone was at their workstation and their desk, and they loved that. I'm sure over the years, it's been people that have just kind of thought they were beneath it, but I doubt if they really lasted that long if they had that attitude, because I just don't think you can have that attitude and work in that job at all.
Larry, did you have a question about what he's doing now in Oklahoma?
Yeah, but I wanted to ask a couple more things about your thoughts on WWE. Do you think it would immediately improve the show if they cut down to 2 hours, or no?
I mean, you know, they have, it's a publicly traded company. They have to appease. They have to make money. I get why it's 3 hours, but creatively it ruins it. So maybe in a big picture, like I said, like even if it's my most favorite show, like binge watching a season of something, you may have some nights you may watch 3 episodes and then take a break. But I mean, to have 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, and then everything else, it's just too much. And you know, and to not have anything invested in some of the characters, and they're also underdeveloped, and, you know, no one's really over, and it's just kind of this, I just see this visual, this cartoon bubble of the car tires just spinning, you know, it just seems to go on, and, you know, I don't think we should go back to, you know, the Crash TV or anything, but it would be nice to have some storyline where I'm invested in seeing the outcome, but it just seems like it's just this never-ending cycle. I don't think they'll ever change it because they did not get, from what I've read, they did not get the reckoning for the TV rights, that they have to make that money somewhere else. So
yeah.
I don't see them cutting back.
I guess I'm just dreaming to think that the network at some point, the ratings would get low enough that the network itself would say, you know, we're only going to do 2 hours. We're not going to do three. I don't follow the ratings on that network closely enough to know, like, is Raw still so highly rated, even with the drop-off, that it's still one of the more highly rated shows on USA? I'm guessing it still is.
Well, didn't they talk to one of the executives and they had some sort of statement that we're staying the course. It's a popular show.
Yeah, New York Post wrote a rather scathing piece, basically implying that the WWE ratings were half of what they once were not that long ago. And NBC Universal came out immediately and said, we're happy with the ratings. We're going to stay the course. That's exactly what you guys are talking about. Yeah, it was in response to a New York Post article that was basically bashing the WWE product and the ratings.
Last question I wanted to ask was the about the promos, and it's really one of the things that I find most discouraging about the show is that they just seem so canned and so scripted, word for word, without in general much feeling behind them, because people are just reading stuff that's been written for them. Is that the way it was when you were there, and is that what are your thoughts on that?
There were people that were veterans that would not go off scripted promos. They would go off of bullet points. And from when interviews I've heard from other, like, veteran bookers, like Jerry Jarrett or whoever, Jim Cornette, they said for, you know, certain guys, they would do bullet points. You know, you have to talk about or promote whatever storyline's going on. And then there were people that were great talents, but they had problems conveying who they were and they needed help. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if scripted promos, that's another thing that I think there's a misconception that all writers want to put words in a wrestler's mouth and write, you know, these promos. I think they're doing it because they can fit promos into a segment. There was, I think, 10 segments on a Raw when I was there, and now with the third hour, there's 15. So I think that's why you have all those writers, because they have to write all the content. We have 4 minutes to do a promo, write something that clocks in at 4 minutes rather than, you know, really half the time when I watch the show and I see someone in the ring and they talk and talk and talk, and it's just like, if you were really mad at somebody, you'd walk up in there and smack them in the face. And it's just this whole idea. You know, I think that's the thing about the 3 hours is the format, too, that we've had the same format of the television show since 1992. And
hear, hear.
You know, I would love to see something different. You know, you just change it up. I mean, the idea of, like, okay, I'm going to say something at the beginning, and it's going to set it up at the end. And I mean, just a level of, you talk about Mid-South, I mean, they would run out of, it's kind of cheesy and people wouldn't like it, but back then it was great, you know, like, we run out of time, you know, we're going to have to show you the next, you know, and all chaos is breaking loose, and just something that just makes you just, you know, either give NXT a couple of matches on the show. Nitro used to do the whole, like, the first hour was, you know, different commentators.
Different. It is amazing, you know, the Monday Night Wars, like, there's things about both of those shows, WCW and WWF at the time, that people don't really acknowledge, but were as important, if not more so, than the stuff that always gets talked about. And one of them was, shows did not start the same way every single time. Sometimes you would see the effect of what had happened the show before. They would show somebody sort of distraught mentally. Like, that's how you'd open the show. Or you'd have somebody who was pissed about something that happened on Raw the week before, and then they would just come storm, and they're just storming through the halls. That's how they open the show. You know, it's like, where is that son of a bitch? I'm going to get him. You know?
Yeah.
Or you could do something like, oh, we're just going to have Stone Cold, like, stalk Vince McMahon for an entire show. And, you know, or we're going to spend the whole show building up this confrontation between Vince McMahon and Stone Cold, and then we're not even going to pay it off, and nobody's going to care. Like, they're just going to be so thrilled. And,
right.
Like, I mean, again, it's a TV show, and the best, I mean, TV has never been better, and I think they have to rise to that challenge.
I absolutely agree about that situation because, you know, I watch, you know, probably all the same shows you guys do, and you do come away with, after watching your favorite show, from like, that's why people don't go to the movies, because you can watch, you know, Netflix has stuff like, you know, Daredevil or Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones or any of those shows, and, you know, I know people have talked about this before, but about when it's done right and when WWE just, oh, you got us, you know, you really had us invested in that great moment. And I think that's all fans really want. And I just think that, I mean, you can't pump the brakes and stop whatever machine that keeps on going that is the WWE. That's the problem. They can't reevaluate. And then sometimes if you reevaluate it too many times, you have like what Nitro did. Is that they would change every, you know, couple of months. It was a different format. It was more like Crash TV. Now it's just matches. Now it's this. And TNA has done that as well over the years. And it's just kind of a... I definitely think they need to sit down and go, okay, if we're 3 hours, we need to come up with something that is going to get our fans' attention, that they can watch, you know, and... I'm sure they pay somebody somewhere a lot of money to see what segments do the best and, you know, when people shut off and when fans get bored with certain characters and stuff. So it just seems like, you know, just the whole format of the show just really needs to kind of have some life. But even just, and then also, if, like, you have some of the promos and the talking segments are done by the most bland, mediocre people, and it's just sort of like, is there anybody out there, you know, forever hold your peace and say something if you feel like you can bring it, you know? I had read a lot of stuff with Mick Foley just saying, have somebody come out and try something, succeed or fail, but at least do something. And, you know, they're very WWE is like working for a studio, and you're an actor, and you're working for the studio, and there's only one studio, and they only make one type of movie. So if you're not that type of person that does that, then you can go somewhere else, but there is nowhere else. You know, it's sort of like, if you do high spots, I'm sorry, that's not the movies we make here. Or, you know, other kind of, you know, world of sports, UK submission, catch can style, we don't do that here. So, you know, then you have so many people that could, you know, Kevin Owens was just like dynamite. You know, it was just in the stuff he did in Ring of Honor, and it just seems like they so sabotage themselves when they're just like, you know, stop, hold the presses, someone is getting over, we got to stop it, we got to do 50-50 wins and losses now and totally kill, you know. I mean, if I was a producer and the entire arena turned on their phones to create this firefly effect, you know, I would give the guy the ball and let's see where he goes with it, not job him out every other match, you know. It's kind of like, it seems like they just curse themselves sometimes.
Well, and I think the 50-50 booking now is really, you can really see where it's hurt them when they've lost so many people to injury, and then you've got all these guys that are now being thrust upon us as top stars that have been booked 50-50 out the wazoo, and it's hard to take them seriously as top stars now when they're trying to make them top stars. Real problem.
They don't have, well, I mean, I watched something and I never realized this, how few, because they don't use celebrities anymore for WrestleMania, MAU's former, like, stars like The Rock or, you know, Undertaker comes out, Hunter comes out once a year. No one has been cleanly beaten and put over. You know, you've not had a star like a Cesaro come over and beat a Triple H cleanly and passed on the torch.
Yeah.
They're kept fresh and they're kept on top because they need them for the big money match at WrestleMania. And, you know, if you're doing a retirement match, you used to have, you know, feuds, and this is way back, but, like, if you have a Magnum TA versus Mr. Wrestling 2, that's old versus new. And when you have a retirement match with Shawn Michaels and it's versus Ric Flair, you're not passing anything. Instead of passing it forward, you're passing it sideways, and you'd never have any sort of, you know, forward movement. And that's what just becomes really frustrating because nobody beats anybody. If Kevin Owens had upset the world by beating John Cena, they'll spend the rest of the, you know, the year showing that how it was a fluke and that it didn't mean anything. You know, it's becoming very frustrating.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. I was, you know, listening to Kevin Sullivan's podcast a few weeks ago, and he was talking about Eddie Graham in Florida telling them, if we're going to get somebody's ass over, we're going to get somebody's ass over. And it was like that was the mission, to get them. If you're going to do it, you did it, and you did it all out.
Yeah.
And not this half-ass stuff.
I love all that stuff. I mean, you can learn so much from everybody that's, especially someone like Kevin Sullivan, that's just so, you know, and that's why, you know, they don't, I know they have agents in the ring, and we used to have, still had agents in the ring for matches and everything, but, you know, and they had some senior writers and everything that were former wrestlers, but some of the knowledge and everything definitely, I think, should be passed on, and some of it's common sense that I think they live in this bubble, and nothing gets out as far as your point of view of, like, why did you do this? Why did you have, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Nobody wants this person to be the top, you know, turn them heel. You know, that's what people want, you know, and they don't see it, or they go, we know better. We're going to cheer for it in the end. And it's like month after month after month, and people still are not cheering Roman Reigns in the same way they did the other talents. And it's, you know, coming, rather than Roman Reigns beating Brock Lesnar or beating a Triple H, they've made this faction of four guys that are mid-carders that he's going to beat to show how tough he is. And it's just frustrating because he should be beating the top guy to be the champion or the star, you know. It just doesn't make any sense, but, you know. It's about, I think it's kind of political because they don't use celebrities anymore. They use former stars like the, you know, the guys like The Rock and Hunter and Taker for once a year at WrestleMania. So they never get in that situation where they have to pass the torch, you know. And that's where I think now, I mean, how many people are they going to have to fill in Dallas? And so many people are injured. They haven't put anybody over. And these people that they have put on a pedestal are off making movies and do not have the schedule or the time to make the big event. So now they have all these guys that they didn't get over. And, you know, they're sort of twisting in the wind. You know, they jobbed out Sting. Sting passed the torch to Hunter. You know, that's ridiculous, you know. We couldn't have someone that's like,
I honestly can't believe I'm just stunned. I want you to get a chance to talk about what you're doing now and what you're excited about in wrestling with what you have a hand in. But, like, I mean, I say this all the time. I book a promotion called Platinum Championship Wrestling, and we book stuff out a year in advance. Our freaking indie from Porterdale, Georgia. And I know what the big two or three matches are going to be for our big show of the year that we do at the end of September. I know what they are the big show before. And I'm like, if I can do that, you know, and then work backwards with all the insanity of dealing with indie wrestlers and their egos and are they getting arrested and, like, you know, whatever. Like, certainly, I mean, didn't they realize we're going to be in Dallas and have to sell 100,000 tickets? Maybe we shouldn't beat The Undertaker yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we can save Sting and Undertaker for that. Maybe we can. I can't believe. I mean, I would love to think. I would just assume that they know what the main event of WrestleMania is. But there's a part of me that thinks maybe they don't yet. And I don't think I've ever thought that about WWE, that they didn't know at this point what they were going to do. But it doesn't feel like they do.
You know, such a large venue, you would think that would be, you know, how do you fill Pontiac Silverdome? It has to be Hulk Hogan versus Andre. That's the biggest match we have.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, I think after you have a situation where it's the brand, it's the company, not the individual,
mm-hmm.
The way they have that attitude, they do not ever think that one match will draw people in. It's the experience. That's a lot of people that are just going to show up and hope. Because, I mean, it's not a sure thing that sometimes there's been some stinkers as far as WrestleMania that they've produced over the years. So, you know, there would be nothing worse than kind of leaving Dallas thinking, oh, we totally got ripped off. You know, we paid for this whole experience and now we have to go back to New Zealand or Australia, wherever these people come from for, you know, and
yeah.
An event. It seems like we're going to fill 100,000 people in this arena. We have to have, you know, Austin versus Brock and Texas Deathmatch, you know, and something incredible. And, you know, when they did the Ronda Rousey and Hunter and Stephanie and The Rock, it seemed like they had already cinched it, that they already knew what they were doing. But, you know, things changed for sure. I'm sure they've got an ace up their sleeve. I'm sure, you know, LeBron James will team with The Rock or something. I don't know. They always, you know, they do network and they are more visible and they are more out there as a public eye. So they could bring, you know, some talent to get them some mainstream attention. But I don't know. It definitely seems like you said Sting versus Taker was such an exciting thing that could have done. And, you know, it just seems like missed opportunities.
Well, what are you working on right now? Like, what are you doing in wrestling in Oklahoma? I'm really excited to hear about that. So please, I mean, we're already a little over time, but I definitely want to give you the time to talk about what you're doing and what you're excited about right now.
Well, right now I was participating with some local promotions and interested in some of the stuff that they're doing. Is that what you're referring to, or just... I mean, I do stuff with
and
Mass Republic. Everything they do with Mass Republic is just it's licensing and doing everything Lucha that's not associated with, you know, it's more independent as opposed to with associated with just CMLL or AAA. We work on television projects, nothing I can really say right now because, you know, we don't want to tip anyone off, but I've been working with Kevin on a docuseries for about a year and involving wrestling and just, you know, unfortunately, when you can't do just a regular wrestling show, it has to be bells and whistles and it has to be something else. Which I think is a mistake because I think people would like an alternative. But, you know, with going what sells, I definitely do stuff with Mass Republic. I do lots of spec script writing for TV projects and stuff like that. And some of them have scenes of pro wrestling in them, but, you know, that's not the sole purpose. Got some different projects for WWE films, hopefully, potentially. Just really just trying to it's like so many opportunities and everyone is vying for that same opportunity. And luckily just the best is to surround yourself with the good people. Kevin Kleinrock at massrepublic.com. If you're going there, they have I'm new to this, the loot box. They do the Lucha loot box. But they do the unboxing and people get every month and open it up and they get all this merchandise and stuff like that. They've done that with different things like different merchandise. But the best thing to do, I mean, what I think we've been trying to do is because I'm a dad and I have kids, I definitely work on a lot of kids' projects that present wrestling on a level of being more age appropriate, because sometimes there is sort of content that we've worked on, kid lucha projects and some kids programming that involve wrestling elements. It's a constant, okay, this didn't work, let's try this. So, I think we did stuff in Tulsa with Steve Cox has actually got a promotion in Tulsa called Do It To It Promotions. I don't know if you remember from Steve Cox was Michael Hayes' partner in UWF and World Class. And
Yeah,
it's kind of a smash mouth. And they've got some really big names. And I think they're going to be starting in 2016 doing a regular show about every month. And I've done some PR stuff with them. And, they've asked me some sort of advisory type position of about some things, and it's a lot of fun, definitely. And not just being part of, I still keep in touch with some of the people from WWE, so it's always nice to know that, kind of hear what's going on, but then like appreciate what's not going on in my world right now, because I am living in Oklahoma and I'm not like waking up in a panic at 3 o'clock thinking I forgot something. I didn't make copies. I wish I had something specific to mention or discuss or advertise, but right now everything, I'm very superstitious, and I think if I got into too much specifics, I'd end up jinxing the whole thing. That's how scientific I am with that.
Well, I'm glad. I'm just glad you still have a love for wrestling and for writing in general and storytelling. And, you got the battle scars. You, like I said, you went through the looking glass and you came out the other side, and it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Fantastic guest. And it was just great having you on.
Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. I'm sorry again for the voice. I'm kind of hoarse because of you know how it is. One person gets the sniffles, and then everybody gets the sniffles, and I get back. It's definitely ready to end it. They said they had a bowl.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brandon.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Man, he had a lot to say. It was pretty great, huh, Larry?
Yeah. Real nice guy.
We got a couple things we got to get to. We just got to jump right into them.
Yeah.
Larry, we got to do the police blotter.
All right. Let's see if we can cue up the appropriate music. I don't know if this clip worked. Let's see.
Yes. Nice. The first Tipping Point police blotter. Larry, this is all you. Take it away.
Well, we'll start with a man who's no stranger to trouble, Mr. Dan Masters. Who's now, former Georgia Announcer of the Year, who's, now out in Los Angeles. You can see him on KDOC TV announcing NWA, or it's not NWA, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, David
mm-hmm.
Marquez's show. This last Saturday, I guess it was, before the tapings on Sunday, Mr. Masters was out minding his own business or something along those lines, walking back from wherever he was going, and he saw some poor citizen being harassed by the police.
Oh, no.
They were being harassed. So Mr. Masters pulled his camera out of his pocket and began videotaping the interaction between the officer and this gentleman. Well, the officer told him to turn off the camera and get to stepping. Well, Mr. Masters got to stepping, but he didn't turn off the camera. And the officer grabbed according to Mr. Masters, the officer took the camera out of his hand, threw him in the squad car, erased the tape of whatever it was he had taped, and then only at that point turned on the camera inside the car. So none of that was recorded for police purposes, and dragged Mr. Masters off to jail, charged with impeding an investigation.
Wow.
Impeding an ongoing investigation. So yeah, he wound up spending the night in jail. Got out in time to go to the taping, though.
Well, that's going to be an ongoing story. I'm sure we'll talk to Dan Masters at a later date once that thing resolves. I can't imagine that he's not going to come away with a nice little chunk of change out of that. Though I would imagine also Dan Masters is going to be sued by the prisoners that he spent time with for the worst sex that they ever had. but wait, there's more. Larry, we have another story.
Well, there's actually three. The second one's a real quick one.
Oh, my God.
That you may remember out at Peach State a couple shows back, there was two women brawling in the crowd.
Yes.
Well, apparently there is some sort of legal charge that came out of this, and this was an altercation involving the mother of wrestler Glenn Chips Matthews and a woman who takes photographs out there, who's a fan named Tanisha Hunter. I do not know the details of this, but I've been told there is some sort of litigation pending between these parties out there at Peach State. So yes, true. But the The major story of our crime segment relates to a guy that you know well and that you brought into Platinum Championship Wrestling and a very well-known figure in Georgia or in Florida, Ron Neamey. Ron Neamey was found guilty by a federal jury of defrauding the government. He was working for a moving company in Georgia called Colvin. Yeah, they're pretty big. I mean, you've probably seen their vans around. And this had to do with they were moving military people. And Neamey was convicted of increasing the weights on the stuff that was being shipped and overcharging the government so that Colvin Moving wound up with more money.
Oh,
so he's the story. This is Associated Press story. This has been out for some time, actually. He's was convicted, and the government wants $158,000 back from him. And he's also convicted of apparently of mail fraud. However, he is not in jail. The sentencing has not taken place. And what I learned from somebody who has some knowledge of the situation is that his lawyer was working vigorously before the sentencing to try to bring in mitigating evidence about this crime, and with the claim that actually Neamey never signed any of these things, that he's the fall guy for Colvin in this situation, so that he was not the one who actually falsified the paperwork.
Wow. I mean, you know, just on the surface, it seems like it's kind of a bit of a shakedown. It's like getting busted by a camera at a red light, where it's just like, just pay the fine. You know, like that. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to, right? We don't have to have this go any farther. Just kick over money. And we'll definitely try to we'll stay on top of all three of these stories, but we have to go. But before we do, Larry, you wanted to talk about the Georgia Wrestling History Awards. I think
it's that time of year again, and to let people know that the staff at GWH is soliciting nominations for this year's Georgia Wrestling Awards. And just a quick reminder of the categories: overall wrestler, best technician, best male performer, best female performer, the Ted Allen Legends / Mentor Award, best tag team or stable, most improved wrestler, best manager or valet, best promoter, best booker promotion, best live event, best announcer, best referee. So we'll post those on the website as a reminder too, but feel free to forward your nominations to our the guy who's handling this thankless task in a lot of ways, Brian Slack. And let me get his email address here for folks, and we'll post this up so people can do this. But get your nominations into Brian at Brian Slack, GWH, at yahoo.com. Brian Slack, GWH.
And to make it clear, this is the nomination process,
yes,
which means you're throwing names at them. These don't count as votes. It's just anybody who you think should be up for these various categories. We'll, Larry and company will whittle it down to a reasonable number of the people who truly should be up for these awards. And then I'm going to write a full disclosure about it, basically highlighting why those three people are the nominees and what their various strengths are to win that particular award. I think it's a great way to do it. You know, back in the day, it used to just be the ballots would go out to people of note, and then people would write in whoever they wanted, which isn't a huge problem, but it did create a situation where often people basically got votes who, let's just be honest, just didn't deserve to be there. And this is an attempt to sort of mitigate that and just go, you know what, here's, you know, a rough number, three people who really are sort of top contenders for, say, Booker. Here's the three people who did really great stuff, and I'll give them a write-up and go, here's some things that you may not have known about them. They might be people you aren't familiar with. So for those of you who think, for example, Middle Georgia is always underrepresented, this is your chance. Get with Brian, send him some nominees, and we'll definitely, Larry and company will give it a fair look, and it's a chance to get some people in there who might otherwise not get noticed. And they'll get a write-up from me. So,
I think in the past we've gone with between three and five in each category. And, of course, there's still the opportunity to write in people, but we want to get the categories on the ballot for each category, probably between three and five.
Yeah. So definitely get with Brian on that. And all of this will be up on Georgia Wrestling History. And, wow, that was a big show, huh, Larry?
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. And, you know, I do not – got a couple of guest choices that I want to run by you to see who we ought to go with next time, and hopefully we'll have Miss Rachel back with us next week as well.
Yes.
You do the outro. You always do that.
All right, I'll do the outro. I'm happy to. So for our guest this evening, and don't forget to get those votes or those nominations in to Brian, but for Larry Goodman and Stephen Platinum and the absentee this week, Miss Rachel, we bid you good night and thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week on The Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.